Hey everyone, welcome to Season 2, Episode 17 of Ron and Matt Must Listen. Today, our guest is Steven, former member of a lot of great bands, including Julia, Kill Holiday, Tap and Die, and Unbroken.
Thank you so much for joining us today, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So what album did you pick for Matt and I to check out?
It's Scream Jack is a Scream by Rocket from the Crypt.
Yeah, that's a band that I have never seen, but would love to have got the opportunity to.
It's an experience. Yeah, it is. It's always
I've seen Hot Snakes twice. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that there might be some level of the same energy. But
it's different. There's a lot of showmanship with Rocket. They put on
that makes sense.
They put on a show. Like, it's not really just you're not there just to actually hear the music. You're there to see the whole thing.
Sure, that makes sense. So how did you first get exposed to Rocket?
Just growing up in San Diego, the San Diego band. So you can't help but know them. It was because before they did Rocket, John Reese had a band called Pitchfork.
Oh yeah,
and that's about right when I was getting into hardcore and punk in the San Diego scene. Pitchfork was still playing. And then when they broke up, I can't remember which one was first. I think Rocket came before Jehu, Dry Lake Jehu, but I'm not positive.
I think you're right.
But it was just one of those things. But the problem for me at the time is obviously we didn't have the internet back then. So like word of mouth was still the way to go for shows and stuff. And if you had a ride or knew the right people, you could get the things. So like, they played some shows not knowing what was going on, and then they played 20 and over shows, and I was still underage, so there's a lot of early stuff that I missed out on just based on being too young. But then when they would play all ages shows, I would go as much as I could.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So do you remember when you first heard this album?
Right when it came out, I couldn't tell you what I was doing or what I was wearing, but I could. it was a record that we were expecting to come out. We were already, fans of the band. So when it came out, it was like, oh, cool, this is out. And it was not a disappointment by any means. It's a really solid record, start to finish. But stated that it's not my favorite Rocket record, but it's their best record. And so that's why when you asked to pick one, I went with that just based on the fact that when you themed it, like, as something that people should listen to, this was my go-to. Like, if someone was like, tell me about the band, I say, this is the record you should hear.
So I gotta ask them, what's your favorite Rocket record?
Hot Charity.
Nice.
Yeah. That one, that one's got the hits for me. The ones that really do it. But I mean,
that's my favorite as well. So I'm in agreement.
The only one I can't listen to anymore is Pain as a Fragrance. It doesn't hold up. It's not as powerful as everything afterwards. And pretty much there's not a rotten apple in the bunch. I mean, there's not a record where I'm like, I pretty much dig all of them. But Hot Charity is definitely my tops. But this one, like I said, I think it's their best. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from with that. So when you first heard the record, what stood out to you the most?
It's just powerful. It's just a huge record. You see them live too. They're a powerhouse. From the drums to the loud guitars, like, it's a very, it's a volume. It's just full of volume, and they didn't lose that on the record. Like, it's still, when it starts out with middle, it's just like, just the drums, it's just a big sound. And then when they come in, it's just like, it's like that thing where, if you're driving a car, you find yourself speeding without realizing you're speeding, because the music just has that kind of like power, and it's very like just aggressive in a way that you just kind of get into it, you get amped up.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I hadn't listened to it in quite some time, which is like a lot of stuff that ends up getting picked. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, the first thing I kind of picked up on that I had not thought about in quite some time was the fact that it is like, while there are moments that kind of bring it down at times, like, you know, like I think Used was one, and maybe I'm trying to think of something else that kind of has it, like a little bit slower of a tempo, but like, it's very energetic. And that's something that like was great while I was like, you know, listening to it at work and not at home, was the energetic part of it just, you know, kind of motivated me to keep pushing through some pretty fun days.
What I like about it though is that it's a record full of hooks, and it's a punk rock record, but it's not a pop punk rock record. It's more like I'd call it like punk rock and roll. It's still got those big choruses and those very like happy chord progressions, but it's not poppy, but it still gets you in that like, oh, this is like I said, it's the hook. It just, they got me. This feels good. You know what I mean? Yeah.
No, definitely.
One thing I'm wondering, Steven, is so you were already listening before this album comes out. Isn't mm-hmm. this like their major label debut?
It is. Or, yeah.
Is it, well, were you or any of your friends worried about that?
No, I don't care about that really. I mean, cause like, well, cause I mean, so yeah, this would be the major label debut. I think Interscope did re-release Circa Now, but at this point, I mean, Quicksand was already on a major label. What else? I mean, for coming from like punk and hardcore, I don't think it really mattered. It wasn't like it's something that you're trying to keep secret, to keep safe, you know, from mainstream, but. And also, I don't think it was really something we were worried about, where it's on a major, are they going to change? You know what I mean? Because it's just...
That was the main thing.
Yeah. If you suck, you suck. if your band's run its course and your good records are done, that's just the way it's going to go. But that wasn't the case with these guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's always the argument with Jawbreaker. You know, people hate Dear You. It's a major label debut. And I think it's a great record.
But, I like, you
know,
it.
I mean, I do too. I liked it when it came out. I still like it to this day, but if you get that argument, oh, it's on a major label. Now they suck. They changed this, or they're polished, or, you know, it's overproduced or whatever.
I figured I'd ask, because last week we were actually talking about Shudder to Think album, Pony Express.
One of my favorite bands.
And that was their major label debut. Mm-hmm. Which is a fucking weird as shit album. So I mean, but they maybe also had it harder in that I don't know a lot about the San Diego scene. I just know with the DC kind of purists, like, oh man, you're not on Discord anymore, like you must be selling out. But yeah, it's another one where the band definitely did not, well, I guess they did change their sound actually.
But I think that was their natural evolution. I think that's just the way they were going. If it was on, they were on Sony or Epic too, I think, I can't remember. But if it was still Discord, that record would still sound like that though. You know what I mean? That's just what they were doing. And X-Fretch T-shirt is one of my like top five favorite songs of all time.
It's
so
a jam.
I could put that on repeat, just listen to it all day. In fact, I stole it, an idea from it on the Kill Holiday record, because I loved it that much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, I love
that. That's funny. So that's another thing that I was curious about. So listening to this, I mean, you've been in quite a few bands. Mm-hmm. We talked beforehand about My Love of Julia, as well as, you know, many people know you from Unbroken. What influence did this band or this record have on, you know, your musical styling?
With Rocket, it's funny because I have a slew of songs I've been writing for a long time that I would love to sound just like Rocket, but they don't, because Rocket's Rocket and I'm me. So it's like that idea of like, I want to be influenced by this and do something that's just like it, but it doesn't really come out that way. So I can't really say for certain, like any band I've done. I mean, to be honest with you, Unbroken would probably be the closest to any of the stuff, but not to your ears, but just on the vibe. I mean, because anything San Diego, kind of, it funnels its way back into San Diego. It's a city that influences itself. So, you know, Heroin, Antioch Garrow, to Jehu, to Rocket, to God, I don't even know. But I mean, just Amenity and Forced Down, like there's so many bands that all of us liked. Like everybody in those scenes I just named all like the other bands. It's not something where it's just this whole like segregated, well, here's the hardcore, here's this, and here's whatever. Everybody was kind of taken from it. So if I was to sit there and say and think about like, well, what would those bands have done that really influenced me, would have gone into Unbroken first and foremost, because it's a San Diego vibe. Anything after that, now I think at this age that I am, I think everything is I don't know how to, it's just weird, man. I feel like it's just a big a recipe book from so many sources now, probably with whatever I
sure
do. So I couldn't really pinpoint it.
No, that makes perfect sense. I mean, that's completely logical. I just ask because basically anytime we have somebody bring an album, that's something I'm always curious about, like whether it was something that had like, and sometimes you can hear right away, like before you even get on, like, oh, I know that this was a major influence on this. Like you can totally, and then there's other people who bring something to the table where you're like, oh, I don't know. I don't know how this influenced they did.
It's hard because like, I mean, everybody has it, like certain people have styles. Like it doesn't really matter.
Right.
What I'm, you know, I could be listening to like Enya and go write a punk song today, but you wouldn't know I was listening to Enya. Yeah, it's a stupid example, but it's the first thing that came to mind. But it has nothing to do with the sound, you know. And it's funny because every time, if I was to say, well, I'm going to listen to Rocket and I'm going to write a song like Rocket, I'm basically just going to rip off Rocket. You know what I mean? So it's not really,
right,
it's not going to be mine. But what I can say is an influence from them overall, and this is like just John Reese is a big guitar hero of mine. He's definitely somebody that I look up to and respect and have stolen a lot of tricks and look to for inspiration in a way. But with Rocket's sound overall, I mean, their guitar tone has always been great, but what I always love about them, a band is only as good as its drummer. And Adam was a giant powerhouse in that band. And if I play drums, I want to copy him. If I did a record where I'm playing all the instruments, I want to copy his sound. I want to play, you know, just do what he did. And then kind of base everything off of that. But again, going back to like the guitars and stuff, it's a powerhouse. They, Marshalls and Les Paul, which is same thing that I use. And it's just, they power chords. It's just, like I said, it's almost weird because they're doing a punk rock and roll format without being poppy, but it's still just got that power. But then the hooks, you know, it just kind of always gets you. It's kind of the same way I feel about like the Ramones, you know, it's not pop punk to me. It's still a punk rock and roll, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's kind of happy, but that's the point. It just, you know, it's got that feel good aspect to it. And Rocket does that with a lot of stuff too. And then there's this other stuff Rocket has, like if we're going on those records like Hot Charity or what's it called, State of the Art, where it's just like there's some straight up just punk, dirty punk riffs in there. It, you know, the ugly parts, but it's still catching because it's Rocket playing the song, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think too, like listening to this record and like looking at it, like overall, one of the things that I like about it is I like the way it flows. I like that there are some moments where it's not so like punchy and aggressive. It does take like a little bit of a back off the punchiness of it. But at the same time, there were parts of it too that remind me a little bit of like having a little bit of garage rock influence.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, like, and I'm a big fan of stuff like that as well. So, yeah. It had been some time since I've listened to Rocket. I mean, even overall, but I enjoy this record every time I listen to it. Hot Charity is definitely the one that gets the most listens from me as well.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely can see all of that. I also felt like there was, you know, a bit of like the 90s alt rock vibe that you could definitely pick up on in certain songs, like, you know, that was kind of, I don't know, it wasn't quite as commercialized as stuff that maybe hit like, you know, mainstream, like Nirvana got commercialized very quickly, right, or whatever.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah,
I don't feel like it has that much of a vibe, but there are just certain moments where I'm like, oh, you can definitely tell this has that 90s vibe in certain tracks.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
I think, what was it? Salt Future may have been the one that I was thinking of. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, I 100% agree. Matt, I forgot to ask you, did you listen to this before?
No. I mean, I had heard them. I had a lot of, you know, I had a lot of friends where they were always mentioned, like, when I was, I don't know, when I was first, like, going to shows. So I heard a lot of random stuff from them. You know, you're going to a show, someone's playing, whatever. But I'd never heard a full album. I'm obviously familiar with some of the lineage of the members from other bands, as, you know, Pitchfork was mentioned, and obviously Drive Like Jehu. But no, I had never heard a full album by them. And I thought it was good. And to speak to, like, what you were saying, Ron, I was almost going to say, like, while I wouldn't say it's poppy, you know, also to what Steven's saying, it's not poppy. It almost does in some parts of the record. I don't want to say homage, that probably is shitty, but there's just, like, parts in songs that remind me of older music. So you like bringing up garage rock. Like almost like a respect, and you could see they're influenced, but not influenced in a way where they're fucking, I don't know, the Hives, or I'm trying to think of like those bands that came out in the early thousands that were just trying to be garage rock from the 60s. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking, like, the vibe I always get from it, like when I hear that, is like Question Mark and the Mysterions vibe.
I think more is
what sticks in my head.
Mm-hmm. There's always going to be that element too of like Stooges and MC5 when anybody says garage, and like proto punk.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, as you listen to, like, God, what song? It's one of those with Hot Charity, which just straight up has that da 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 da. It's totally got that, you know, that kind of that 60s, late 60s, early 70s sound to it. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah,
definitely. It's, again, the thing about garage music in that sense is just production too. So, I mean, if they did this totally stripped down, actually, you know what? Production's really hard to say, though, because sometimes a band just makes the sound, being on how they play. It doesn't matter, you know, whatever guitar they're using, whatever recording method's being done, they're going to sound like the band. But I think if they were intentionally going garage, they could really strip things down. But in my opinion, they just went out. It's always like guns blazing, you know, it's just full, you know, get the meters clipping, just get as loud as we can, get it huge.
It's such a high, I mean, it is such a high energy record for like, I mean, a majority of what, I think it's 13 tracks, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I got 14.
Is it 14?
Yeah, I took some notes.
Someone took that.
Yeah, you're right. It is 14. Yeah.
I was going to just wing it. I mean, I've been listening to this record for, you know, God, how many years? Almost 30 years? 23 years is this? I can't do math. But yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of ingrained in my soul, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, no. I understandably so. Like, it is a really good record. I mean, like I said, I think I've spent the most time with Hot Charity because it was the one that just kind of stuck around with me. And yeah, like Matt was saying, with being more familiar with their with the other bands, I definitely have more of a relationship with like, I was a big Hot Snakes fan. And then Pitchfork is another one. I really like Pitchfork. But yeah,
it's hard though, because it's almost not fair because one person was in all these bands.
I know. It's
funny because you brought up the Julia thing. I was in Julia and Unbroken at the same time, and I'd get people that would say, "Oh, I like Julia better than Broken," or "I like Unbroken better than Julia." And I thought, well, why though? What difference does it make? Because one person's in both bands doesn't mean the two should be pitted against one another. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean that. I find that maybe that's kind of silly.
But yeah, I mean, because like you get that Jehu or Rocket, and then you get Hot Snakes or Jehu or whatever. It's like, well, it's all good, you know.
No, 100% agree with that. 100% agree with that. I think I was just thinking in terms of like the things that I've spent the most time with, and preference wise.
Oh, for sure.
Like,
for sure.
My preference definitely goes in that direction.
Yeah.
And maybe with Jehu, it's because of the fact that my attention span can be very piss poor with music sometimes. as I'm sitting in my Charles Bronson t-shirt right now.
There you go. I like the short and fast sweet songs too. It's all good.
it's just that's been a common theme. Like sometimes when we're talking on here, it's me talking about being bored with something. Mm-hmm. But that's just the way it kind of rolls. No, man. So I appreciate you talking about this a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, kind of what you do with music. I mean, are you playing right now with anyone?
No. So sort of, I moved to Connecticut a year ago and I hadn't met anybody. And I just randomly through social media connected with somebody I probably should have known all this time, but didn't, someone my age who was around during the 90s with me. And we started talking, have a lot in common. And then he went and recruited a couple other people. And so as of today, we might actually have a band going. We'll meet.
That's awesome.
Discuss it. Nice.
And see. So yeah, I'm kind of excited and interested because I thought, honestly, at this point, moving out here, I was done. Thought I was kind of done playing. Not because I wanted to be, but just situationally, you know. So
yeah, sure.
But yeah, if this works out, then who knows? Maybe you guys will hear something about it, and everybody else will hear something about it, and by the summertime, or who knows.
No, that's awesome, man. I mean, that's awesome to hear, obviously, because, you know, I like your body of work. I think you've been in an incredible amount of talented bands, and, you know, I think that speaks to your talent level as well. So
thank you. That's a band I just want to play guitar in, but going back to when you asked the question about the Rocket influence, like I said, I've got a bunch of songs that I might just try and record by myself playing everything. That would be Rocket influenced, but will it sound like Rocket? I couldn't tell you.
No, that's cool.
You know what I mean, that's in the works too. It's hard right now with, you know, you work full-time, got a full-time family and responsibilities, yep, and stuff. So getting the chance to really kind of sit down and play or even start recording is kind of, you know, even when you get free time to kind of do it, you might not even be inspired at the moment to want to do it. So it's it is what it is, so to speak.
Yeah, no, completely understand, man. I'm in the same boat. I don't play music, but I'm in the same boat. There are days that I come home and I'm like, just not interested to do the things that I should be doing that would be beneficial for, you know, pushing like what I do with my label, or even, you know, probably researching shit for this to make us seem like we're more professional and not just here to talk to people.
That's the thing.
But it's more conversational for us.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing about anything artistic. If you force it, it's not fun and it's probably not going to sound that good or be that great of a body of work. But if it comes to you naturally, that's usually when your best stuff happens. But if you've got other stuff going on at the same time, I mean, you know, stuff hits you at the weirdest times. And sometimes if you're not ready to deal with it, it's going to get lost.
No, yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, I was going to say, do you mind if I ask about what it was like growing up in the San Diego scene? Because it's the scene that I am most intrigued by. I love so many bands from that scene, like Heroin, Antioch Arrows, Swing Kids, Locusts, Unbroken, Jewel, like all of that is like really in my wheelhouse for things that I really, really love and enjoy. So I'd love to hear, like, if you don't mind talking about it a little bit, like what it was like to be in that scene.
Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind at all. That's the question. What is it like?
No, I mean, so, you know, like, obviously it seems like there was a lot of like different styles of music going on there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm from the East Coast, you know, always from the Pittsburgh area. And while there were some times that we had a lot of like crossover shows where there was like stuff that kind of didn't fit together that would be played, a majority of things that came through here, it was always bands that kind of like sounded exactly like one another, or, you know, they had some sort of ties to one another. I feel like San Diego had like just such a strange scene because everybody kind of seemed like they got along and played together. What do you think, you know, allowed for that? Was everybody kind of friendly? Did everybody kind of, you know, run in the same social circles?
A little and a lot of everything. Everybody was friendly, I think, for the most part. San Diego didn't really care about cliques, and they existed, but it wasn't, they could intermingle. It was never like, oh, there's the straight edge kids and they're going to do their own thing, and there's the kids that aren't straight edge and they're going to do their own thing and whatnot. It's like everybody kind of just went under the same umbrella, and everyone liked everybody's bands, everybody liked everybody's shows. And the thing about San Diego too is like no two bands were really identical, so you're going to have a show that's going to have a mixed bill no matter what. and everybody was supportive of what everybody else was doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I'm just always so fascinated because it seems like it would be such a cool scene to be a part of, because it seemed like that was the case. Like, there was a lot of friendship or whatever across the board. It wasn't sort of like, I mean, and I'm not trying to knock where I'm from, by the way, or the scene that I grew up, but there was a lot of like slightly like segregated things. Like, you know, I was straight edge. So it was weird that like I was into what you would consider like screamo, or, you know, like, which I hate always saying it, but like, I mean, cause to us, it was at the time that I got into it, it was just hardcore, but then it kind of got that label at one point. But yeah, I mean, like, it was weird because like not a lot of people in that scene that I was around were, you know, were straight edge. So I kind of had like, felt like a sense of alienation that I feel like anytime I talk to anybody from that scene and anything I've ever kind of read about San Diego, it didn't seem like that was the case. And I'm fascinated by that.
It's not, because I mean, if you look at, you know, if you saw a flyer that said like Unbroken and Heroin or Unbroken Anzac Arrow or Unbroken and Julia or whatever, like to us, that's just a show. But right. To an outsider, they might look at it and go, oh my God, those bands play together. That's so weird. Why would they do that? You know? But we all like the same stuff. I mean, Heroin's a hardcore band. Why would I not like that band? Yeah. Anzac Arrow is a hardcore band. Why would I not like that band? A lot of it had to do with that time frame, especially. It had to do with the uniform. It had to do with what people were looking at, what people looked like. And even Unbroken caught shit for that. We didn't look like your typical straight edge band. So some people weren't, you know, in tune with it. And then, you know, you look at the whole San Diego scene where they, you know, they call it the Spock rock and whatnot, and the white belts and the, you know, but it's like, that it didn't mean anything to us. It didn't, you know, it's just like, oh, cool. You know, and everybody, the way I see it, a lot of us got into this at the same time and we were all wearing the same clothes. We were all wearing, you know, either the punk rock uniform, or you move into like the baggy clothes and the hardcore shirts and baseball hats. And then you kind of get older and you branch off and you figure, okay, I want to dress like this. I want to do this. And didn't really matter about any of that. It wasn't really relevant. You know, it was just the scene. It was just, I don't know. It just kind of, it didn't really dictate inside San Diego's limits of who you could and could not like, you know. It's just, it's all one thing.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that's awesome. I mean, I was always the person who liked so much stuff that was on different pages from one another that it was really hard to kind of find a place where I fit in, if you will. So when I see a scene like that, I'm always like so envious I wasn't in that area.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, there's a lot of places outside too. I mean, I always look at like DC in the 80s and go like, oh, what it would have been like to grow up in that, you know? And then people say the same thing about San Diego. So yeah, I get it. There's a lot of romance to not knowing or to not having been there, but reading about it and hearing about it.
Yeah. I mean, especially because I love so many of the bands. I mean, you mentioned Anzac Arrow, and I feel like so often that band is not mentioned. I feel like they're criminally underrated. Julia to me was criminally underrated as well, but
Julia, like, Julia is. Yeah, I think so. I could see that.
I mean, if from where I'm from, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh, but like Anzac Arrow is not a band that I ever hear anybody talk about. Mm-hmm. And I find that, I don't know. I always find it strange because I thought they were incredible.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have a San Diego bias in my heart when it comes to hardcore.
I think all of us from San Diego do as well.
Understandable. As you should, by the way.
Yeah.
I want it. Whoa.
because it was self-contained. I mean, it is the most southern city in the corner of the country, and it had to have its own scene. I mean, you get bands that would come on tour and stuff like that, but for the most part, Southern California is an isolated area of the country. You know, you got San Diego, you got Orange County, and Los Angeles, and it's kind of all those scenes are doing their own thing, you know, because it's not like when you are elsewhere in the country, you can get bands that are coming through. Yeah, you know, something's always kind of happening. But with us, it's like, oh, well, we're going to have shows. We're going to have bands. We're going to have our own scene. And that's just the way it's going to be. And a lot of it centered around this place called the Shea Cafe, which is like a huge venue for everybody. I mean, we're talking, you know, this conversation started about Jehu and Rocket, both bands played there, you know, and then you get Unbroken, Swing Kids, Julia, Struggle, Heroin, Antioch Era, like every single one of our bands played this place, and pretty much for the majority of us would call it home, you know?
No, 100%, man. I mean, I think that's awesome. Like, I think it's one of those situations that, like I said, like I just romanticize it in my mind because of how many bands that I really, really like love and respect that are from the area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. What would you say if you had to say that, you know, a band that you feel like is from the area that doesn't get enough attention? Who do you think from that era was not getting enough attention?
Oh man, I don't know. That stumps me because it's the thing about the scene itself is that even though we didn't have separate factions as much in the city, they were separate factions outside of the city. So
sure,
someone might refer to it as the gravity scene. I don't know. But to think back, I mean, every band kind of made its mark. I don't know how popular Julia is outside of San Diego. And they weren't that popular within San Diego, to be honest with you. And then Antioch Garo and Heroin, yeah, they're definitely like two of the breadwinners in that genre. Same with Clickedatta Katawi. The gravity bands, especially with all, I mean, they're all shared members for the most part. So it's like,
right.
You know, but naturally, if you find a band that you like and you find out they're in the same members in other bands, you're going to check that band out too, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that applies to a lot. I mean, again, going full circle this conversation, you know, Clickedatta has Mario playing drums, Mario ended up in Rocket, Mario playing Hot Snakes, you know, it's kind of, everybody's kind of got this whole,
right.
Six or less degree of separation in San Diego.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'll stop bothering you about San Diego.
I have nothing but pride.
I like hearing about it.
No, I'm super proud of where I come from. I think it's probably the least generic place that I could see. Like when I'd go out on tours, and I'm not trying to be judgmental about other places, but sometimes I'd go out and I'd see other scenes where everybody looks the same. All the bands sound the same, you know, the first band, the second band, the third band, they all sound the same. I can't tell the difference between any of them. And then you look back where you come from, you're like, ah, that's going home's refreshing. It's nice because there is so much diversity, you know, you can play a show and all the bands are different. And, you know, like it's weird. Yeah, man. Just thinking about like so many bands that, like, you know, we have No Knife, we had Boilermaker, we have all these other bands. That, and we all played shows together. It was that's not like a weird thing, but to an outsider, they might be like, oh, No Knife and Kill Holiday played together. Or, you know, I'm pretty sure Julia played a handful of shows with Boilermaker, you know, like just
right.
You know, to an outsider, that's going to be like I said, talking about the flyer earlier with Heroin and Unbroken on it together. Someone's going to be like, that's so weird. But it's not that weird at all. You know, not to us.
And I think that's the thing that was that I was kind of trying to get at is that's how I feel about it. Like I it's always so weird to me, even now, like I feel like there's still like those kind of like small things that, like, they're like, oh, you like this and this. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that like so many people I think are just locked in on one thing, and like spreading out from that is very difficult for them. Like they like a certain sound and they're just so locked in on that that they never, and I was never that because my introduction to punk was late. Mm-hmm. You know, like I didn't grow up. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, outside of Pittsburgh, like an hour, well, like almost an hour and a half outside of the city of Pittsburgh, and like a very rural place. And I always joke that, you know, my music store was Kmart, So like, you know, my own, because there was no music stores around where I was from. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, my alt rock was my thing when I was a kid, like Sonic Youth and Jane's Addiction and stuff like that were things I really got into. And then I went to work at a music store in college. That's when I got exposed to punk music. Like I had no real exposure until then.
It's all situational. I mean, when we were younger, I mean, we didn't have the internet, and like you'd get a record,
right?
And you'd get a 7-inch, and you'd look at the sleeve, and you'd read the thank you list, and there's all these bands on there, and you're like, okay,
right.
And next thing you know, you're at the record store, and you're like, oh, I remember seeing this band on the band's thank you list. I'm gonna buy this record, you know. And
we talk about that on here all.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
Liner being like liner note whores, looking through liner notes constantly for anything.
Yeah, and now with the way music is done, I mean, all of us, I would be lying to you if I was telling you I wasn't using my phone streaming music driving in the car or whatever. But I am not.
Sure, of course, same.
I'm not looking at liner notes anymore. They don't exist. I'm not right. Studying anything, and I haven't bought any records, physical vinyl records in quite a while, or at least anything I didn't already own. You know, but so it's not like I'm sitting there, like, you know, when I was a kid in high school, it was like you throw on headphones, you put the thing on, you just sit there and get lost in it. Like, I don't really have that opportunity anymore. But the art is lost. The liner notes are lost. The discovery. Yeah. I mean, dude, you'd learn about people, you know, you go on tour to another city, and you're like, oh, this is so-and-so. Oh, I remember, I've seen your name. You know, I know of you just based on you being in someone's thank you list.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that was, I mean, for me, especially like when I initially got to work at a music store, that was one of the first things that kind of became, I don't want to call it like an obsession, but in some way it was like, if I liked something, I'd immediately just start rifling through whatever was in the thank yous and be like, okay, I gotta check this out. And then that was right as that happened is like when the internet and Napster and all that kind of just started to hit. Mm-hmm. So it was like, the situation was like, oh, okay, I can at least download it if we don't have it in the store. Cause there was a lot of stuff that was like not carried necessarily. But like, I remember that being, and then like, I'd find a folder and I remember like getting, and I mentioned it on the one where I talked about Charles Bronson. I discovered Charles Bronson in a folder when I was looking for them specifically. And then I ended up, the same folder was like, it was called like Weirdo Hardcore. And it had like Locusts and like Heroin and Orchid. And it was all this shit that was like really like, that I ended up loving.
Yeah.
Like it really hit me. You know, so yeah, I mean, like, I think that's true. I think I want to, this is going to sound like such an old fucking curmudgeonly thing to say, but I own that. So, I mean, I think there is a part of it that like people now don't have to do the homework.
Oh, they don't.
Like, I feel like when you were a music nerd then, or you were really like, just love music, you legit had to do the homework to find new things. It wasn't readily like, oh, I can click this button and it tells me that this band is like cool, like sounds like this other six cool bands. And then I like those six bands and those six bands. And like you didn't have that. That access was not there for you. You had to go looking. And then you might run into something where you think you're going to really like it because you're like, oh, the name sounds cool. Yeah. And it was in the liner notes from, you know, whoever. And then you buy it and you're like, oh man, that's $17 I'm never getting back.
that's the only good thing about streaming services is that you can try before you buy.
Yeah.
But the thing too, kind of to add on what you're talking about, is not only do you find other things that are running parallel or adjacent, but you also find things that influence that. And that's the cool thing too, is when you hear a band, you go, okay, well, what were they inspired by? And then you find out, you know, there's bands you find out from the 70s that you didn't know existed because somebody mentioned it, or somebody's wearing a t-shirt and you're like, oh, who is that? And you start doing some research and you find stuff. I found a lot of things that way before the internet. Like, you know, I had a poster of Morrissey when I was in the seventh grade. And he's wearing a New York Dolls shirt.
Yeah.
Like, oh, who's a New York Dolls?
So I've got to ask, since you brought up Morrissey, have you seen Morrissey?
Have I seen live?
Have you got to see Morrissey live?
Oh, yes. Yeah, plenty of times.
That's awesome. Yeah, me as well. I am a huge Morrissey fan of his music. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I can't say present day. He means the same, but
yes, yeah. No, of course. No, I saw him like three times in the early aughts.
Okay.
And it was fantastic every time. But yeah. I was huge Smiths and Morrissey fan.
And
so
and that's when I was talking about some of the stuff with Unbroken, we weren't afraid of announcing that. And that was something that a lot of hardcore kids weren't ready for at the time.
Sure.
And it's weird though, because the wave of straight edge bands prior to us, they were all embraced right. in it too. They're all huge Smiths and 80s music
that
fans.
Makes sense.
But for some reason, when we were advertising it, it just, you know, just by wearing shirts, and people were looking at it going like, well, that's so weird. you know, that's not cool, blah, blah, blah. And then it became its own thing. But yeah, I mean, huge Smiths fan. That was something I was into before I even knew what punk rock was. Already just heavily into that. But yeah, so
yes,
yeah,
same for me with that. I was a big fan before I got into like hardcore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So other than New York Dolls, anything else that you like remember getting into sort of in that sort of realm? Like to see someone wearing a shirt or something along those lines that had an impact on you?
Let's see. That's always a good example of one. Not really, because for the most part, a lot of stuff was, my parents were really into music. There's a lot of things that were kind of left out for me to find in my own house, which was a good thing. Growing up listening to like Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and stuff like that, just because of my parents, Van Halen to like a lot of 80s rock music, which was, I was still a big fan of, but like, you know, early Def Leppard was like one of my favorite bands in the world when I was little back. So all that stuff was kind of there. And then you get some of the counterculture ones. So you get to like, you know, like the glam era of David Bowie. You don't know that when I'm a kid, I see like Let's Dance and, you know, China Girl. That's like what's on MTV.
Yeah.
And those are good songs, but that's mainstream David Bowie. So like your parents know that. That's like the safe David Bowie. But like going into like the Ziggy Stardust and the early 70s stuff where it's all glammed out, like that took a little bit of self-discovery. Or like T-Rex, you know, it's like you find out about these things. They're not mainstream things, but you still find a way to uncover them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I understand. I remember, I think it was There's Something About Mary was when I discovered that Jonathan Richman existed in The Modern Lovers.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was a, you know, like a big one at one point and still is. I still love a lot of his music as well as The Modern Lovers record. So yeah. I mean, I feel that like, I feel like everybody kind of in our age group fits into that a little bit, because we all had, at least the people who were really into music, all kind of had a similar experience with like the liner notes and all of that stuff. Kind of to bring it full circle to back to the Rocket album though, because I don't want to hold you up all night. I'm sure you have things that you would you'd prefer to be doing.
No, no, we're good.
But if you had to pick one track on that record and say this is the track you should check out first, what track is your go-to on there?
Oh man, let me look at the list right here, because my first thing would just say On a Rope, because it just gets you right away, and it was probably their biggest song on the record. But Young Livers is good. Fuck, let's see. Might be one of those two songs. Born It Now. Yeah, I go with On a Rope or Young Livers, just because they're probably, for lack of a better word term, the radio friendly songs on the record, but for good reason.
Sure.
They're just sure. You know, they're just great.
You gotta love.
Young Livers would have been my pick, by the way, to be honest.
Yeah.
I had it written down as the one, like, if I was like, yeah, while I was listening to him, I was like, you know what? That would probably be the one I would say, hey, if you want to check this band out and get like a general idea of the sound, check out Young Livers.
Yeah. 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 I mean, honestly, when I want to show someone Rocket, though, I probably put on like Lorna Doom or Pigeon Eater. Songs like that, where it's like, this is the, because Rocket, it's the powerhouse, it's the drums, it's the, they just kind of have this like very bombastic thing about them that's what always draws me in. And so there's other songs that I would say like, okay, I want you to check this out. But again, going back to the original point of this, if I was to pick a record that somebody want to listen to, I'm going to go with this one just because it's all the food groups are represented nicely on this one.
And that's good too, because we usually ask our guests, like, why would you suggest someone listen to this album? So you already hit that one out of the ballpark.
Yeah, because I like I said earlier too, it's like a band could have the perfect record, but it might not be your favorite record, you know, but it's the one that you're going to sell that represents the band the best, you know. There's a lot of bands like that where like, God, I might like the most, I might like the worst record they did, but I can accept that what they put into something else that may have had the most like commercial success, or it might be the most popular album. I can see why people would like it. And I could say, okay, well, this is their best record. It's just not my favorite record. And that's kind of where this is. Like, it's definitely ranks, but this might even be like my third or fourth record in the pecking order of top records with them.
So a question that we were requested to ask everybody who's on it, because the one thing that we hear quite frequently is that this is a very difficult task to pick one thing and kind of say, this is the record I think everybody should listen to. What were some of the other things that you had thought about before landing on this?
Nothing. And I'll tell you why. I get bored with music really easily. And
same.
By that, I mean like new music for the most part. Like, I might hear something. I'm not that old guy that goes, I don't like new music. Mm-hmm. But what I can say is like, I'll hear something and I'll be, okay, that's cool. And I'll listen to it for like an afternoon or maybe a couple of days. And then a few days later, I'm like, I don't feel like listening to this anymore. It doesn't really have any kind of staying power. So what ends up happening, like right now, I'm just on a podcast kick only. I haven't listened to music in a while. But what I'll do is there's a handful of bands that I just throw the discography on shuffle. And I go through these phases of listening to nothing but them. I get in the car, it's them. So Rocket finds its way into that rotation quite often. I'll go through a period of listening to them for like 6 weeks at a time, a few times a year, just the only thing I do. So when you asked me to pick one, they were who I was listening to. And it seemed kind of just like a logical choice. And then my thoughts process again was, all right, well, I'm listening to Rocket. What's the record I would tell somebody to listen to if I was going to show a Rocket? Well, it's going to be Scream, Dracula, Scream. And that was it. So I wanted to not overthink it and try and pick like five of them to where I was like, fuck, I can't think. This is too much. What am I going to do? Let me flip a coin. Okay. Best of five, you know, or best of three. It's kind of like the way when they say like your first guess is usually the best guess or the right guess.
Oh yeah.
And that's kind of what it was. It's just, this was the first one that came to mind. So I just stuck with it.
So now I'm curious, because you said you listened to certain bands' discographies, like what other bands are in that mix?
am I going to get judged here?
No,
not at all.
AC/DC.
Okay.
Okay. I take it back. Now I'm going to
Well, I'm not judging.
Van Halen with David Lee Roth stuff.
All right.
Okay.
Yo, look,
1984 is a great
record. What else goes on? And sometimes, I'm not even gonna say this one because I'll get too much shit for it.
Oh, come on, that's not true. We won't give you shit.
Come off like that.
it's Guns N' Roses, but not the entire catalog, because I will skip a lot of songs. But I will find them when I go through a phase of just wanting to hear that. I'm a rock and roll guy, I'm not going to lie. Like, being a guitar player, I love rock guitar more than anything for the most part. So, you know, it's going on that topic. Like, when people ask, like, who are your influences? Like even though I can tell you how much I love the Smiths, Johnny Marr is not an influence on me, because I don't do anything to where that's something I go, oh, dude, I want to copy that, or I want to borrow that. Like, just It's I'm always just, you know, rock guitar players. The cult goes into that.
Oh,
that,
shit.
What else? And then sometimes I'll just throw on, I'll make some playlists. I'll make something where it's just like all DC bands, or like right now I'm going to go back and rediscover a playlist that's going to try and help me kind of get in the mindset of the songs I want to write for that thing I was talking about earlier.
Yeah. Where, yeah. That's awesome.
The bands that I like, that I want to kind of emulate it, you know, if that Tap and Die record is kind of like a precursor to what I'm still going to keep doing it, because Tap and Die stopped playing because I moved. But if mm-hmm. I didn't move, I'd still be doing that band. So I kind of look at the songs that I want to keep writing as, you know, the second album for what that band would have done.
That's sweet, man. That's awesome. I really like that record. I thought that was an incredibly good record.
I wish it'd come out on Gravity. I wish Matt would have come out of retirement and just let it be, so I could have had that on my
Dude, can I say that his packaging is what makes it so fucking amazing.
Like, yeah, all just the Gravity
packaging
too.
Yeah. The Gravity packaging is always my favorite thing. Like, I'm going to be putting out cassette tapes for this band, Kirk B. Kiss. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? My friend that's in the band, Michael, is a huge Gravity fan too. And I was like, let's just go like full Gravity. I'll just cut a bunch of images out of magazines, pictures out of magazines, and I'll stamp your name on the front. And we'll just put the song titles on the back of like a paper O card. He's like, fuck yes, let's do that. So that's gonna be the total Gravity ripoff.
that's it's funny, because we Unbroken was a New Age Records band, but we did the first 3-1-G records on Unbroken record, and
yeah,
the art on that, the concept was definitely Gravity influence, and that's what we wanted to do. And like JP, I remember, was kind of like, you want to do that? You know, we're like, yeah, like that's what we want to do. It's it doesn't need to be glossy. It doesn't need to be pretty. It doesn't need to be professional. It just needs to kind of just have that, like that punk vibe to it. Something that just kind of shows you care, but you don't care that much. You know, here's where I'm going to stamp this one. I'm going to stamp it right here. I'm going to flip the stamp upside down. Who cares? You know, it's like, it doesn't need to be pretty and commercially packaged to where it sets like an expectation. You know, the lack of expectation is kind of what makes it cool. The looseness of it, the freedom of it is the best part.
My influence was seriously the Mohinder 7-inch, because they all had different covers, and that's one of my absolute favorite things that came out on Gravity, and literally one of my absolute favorite bands of all time.
Yeah. There's a Julia 7-inch we did that too, but the Mohinder one where I just have the inner sleeve, like the paper that holds the record itself with a silk screen on it. And
nice.
And Julia was kind of done the same way too. It's just like, just completely.
That's the first one, right?
Yeah. I have what is it? I'm trying to think, because I know there's a couple covers, I think, for the first record. And there's one where it's just an ink silkscreen of the Cupid with the arrow, I think. And then there's the other one they did where it's the little girl, the face in the box.
If
I remember correctly. But yeah, the first one it's just ink on paper. It's not pretty. It's unique. No two are the same, because it's just hand done.
No, that's what I have such like affection for that. Like, currently working on hand making sleeves for a 12-inch that will probably be out in like late July, for the band Desert Legs. I don't know if you're familiar with the band The Pine at all, but it's Kurt King, who was in the band The Pine. He was the guitar player. His brother played guitar and was the singer. And now his brother is playing drums and he's playing guitar and wrote the songs. And so I'm hand making all of the 150 12-inch sleeves with purple Mylar wrapping paper, like crumbled around old 12-inch sleeves. And then I did all of the inserts. I designed the inserts for them and everything for this.
What's rad about that is someone's going to look at that and go, that is some awesome dedication. And somebody else is going to think you're bananas.
Dude, 100%. And by the way, the one who thinks I'm bananas is 100% fucking accurate. Because every time I start doing, like, I get three done and I go, holy shit, it took me like 2.5 hours.
Yep.
I was going to say, you think you're bananas. Because you told me, like, dude, this is crazy.
I know. There's a part of me that's like, no, this is like, there's something about it that just is, I don't know. I like the uniqueness of all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, I want that to be kind of something that I bring to this whenever I do put out something new. Yeah. But man, no, listen, I cannot thank you enough for chatting. You've been incredible. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me. This is fun. I like being invited to do this. And talking about especially San Diego stuff and things that are like passionate and mean a lot to me, are passionate about and mean a lot to me, is it's not even like arm twisting to do this. This is just a normal conversation I have fun doing.
Yeah, man, I do. I sincerely appreciate it, man. And please stay in touch. I
keep us posted on all the musical endeavors.
Will do.